verses, chapter 15, text 11, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Yatanto yoginas chayinam pashyantyatmanyavasthitam yatatopyakritatmano nainang pashyantyachetasaha yatanto yoginaschainam pashyantyatmanyavasthitam yatantopyakritatmano nainang pashyantyachetasaha yatanto yoginaschainam pashyantyatmanyavasthitam yatantopyakritatmano nainang pashyantyachetasaha yatanto yoginaschainam pashyantyatmanyavasthitam yatantopyakritatmano nainang pashyantyachetasaha. Yatanto yoginas chainam yatanto pyakritatmano nainam pashyantyachetasaha yatanto yoginas chainam pashyantyatmanyavastitam. No. You're adding an extra syllable wherever the ya comes. For instance, which comes three times. When it comes when the I at the end is transformed into a ya. For instance, you're saying Atmani avastitam, but it should be Atmanyavastitam. Yatanto pi akritatma, no, yatanto pi akritatma, it's flowing. Otherwise, you add an extra syllable and the meter becomes disturbed. Try again. Yatanto yoginas chainam. Pashyanti Atman Yavastitam. Four times again. No, same thing you're doing. Same incorrectness. Yatantopyakritatma. No. Ah, now you said it correctly. No, now you said it wrongly again. You can pretend that the yatantop is one word and yakritatma no is another. Try it. Yatanto pyakritatmano. You said? Say it again. Yatanto yoginas chainam. Well, now you solved the problem by leaving out the y sound altogether. You're just saying pashyant atman. But the y has to come. It's not that it's dropped. Yeah, pronounce it pashyantyatman. Pashyantyatmanyavastitam. Almost. Again, you left the y off at the end. You have to pronounce it, but not in a flow, not as a separate syllable. Listen, I'll chant it one more time. Why don't you chant it? Yatanto yoginas chainam Pashyantyatman yavastitam. Yatantopyakritatmano. Nainang pashyantyachetasaha. Actually, it's written in Roman or English script, breaking up the words, and that's what confuses you, because in the Sanskrit, it's not broken, it's a continuous flow. It's supposed to make it easier to read, but it causes confusion. Because if you see the word here, just like Pasha, how do you pronounce that? Pashyanti. And the next word, how do you pronounce that? Atmani. But so it becomes confusing in that sense, but it's supposed to be said as one flow. Pashyantyatmanyavastitam. It's all one flow. There's no stopping in between. And there this ya before a vowel comes twice, which means if you pronounce it like Pashyanti Atmani Avastitam, you add two extra matras. It imbalances the whole meter of the verse. The endeavoring transcendentalists who are situated in self-realization can see all this clearly. But those whose minds are not developed and who are not situated in self-realization cannot see what is taking place, though they may try to. So the first sentence here is, the endeavoring transcendentalists who are situated in self-realization can see all this clearly. What does he see clearly? Then we have to go to the previous verses. We could go to the whole Bhagavad Gita. But let's start just three verses previous. It's talking about the transmigration from one body to another. Shariram yadavapnoti yach chapyut kramatishvaraha grihit vaitani sangyati vayur gandha nivashayat. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. Shrutrang chakshus sparshanam cha rasanam ghranam evacha Adhishthaya manas chayang vishayan upasevate. The living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which are grouped around about the mind. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. Utkramantang sthitang vapi bhunjanang bhunjanang vagunan vitam. Vimurha nanu pashyanti pashyanti jnana chakshusaha. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spells of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. So this verse, which we're just chanting today, continues on the theme of the previous verse, and it states in another way what's just been stated in the verse previously, that those who are jnana chakshu, with the eye of knowledge, otherwise stated here to be yogi, they can see the situation of the atma. Those who have no knowledge of this, they don't see all these things. So Srila Prabhupada's purport. There are many transcendentalists on the path of spiritual self-realization, but one who is not situated in self-realization cannot see how things are changing in the body of the living entity. The word yoginaha is significant in this connection. In the present day, there are many so-called yogis, and there are many so-called associations of yogis But they are actually blind in the matter of self-realization. They are simply addicted to some sort of gymnastic exercise and are satisfied if the body is well-built and healthy. They have no other information. They are called yatantyopyakritatmanaha. Even though they are endeavoring in a so-called yoga system, they are not self-realized. Such people cannot understand the process of the transmigration of the soul. Only those who are actually in the yoga system and have realized the self, the world, and the Supreme Lord, in other words, the bhakti yogis, those engaged in pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness, can understand how things are taking place. Krishna describes here, in this and the verse previous to it, that persons who do not understand the process of transmigration from one body to another, they are vimurha, especially qualified as fools. Fools, but not just fools, but vimurha. Especially exceptional specimens of foolishness. This description pertains to almost everyone in the material world. This is from Krishna's perspective, which means the perspective of reality. Krishna himself is surprised, or he's struck by the foolishness of such people, which means almost everyone. Here, Krishna says that those who are yogis, they can see all of this. Does this mean the karma yogi, the jnana yogi, which kind of yogi? Well, Krishna states the general term yogi, and all yogis, they undertake yoga with the understanding that the body is temporary and the soul transmigrates from one body to another. But as Srila Prabhupada qualifies this statement at in the last sentence of this purport, it's only actually the bhakti yogis who can very clearly see everything. Others, they may not see Krishna's hand in it, or what is the situation of everything. They have some knowledge, they're somewhat better situated than others who don't have this knowledge. The famous example is given of the blind men by touch trying to understand what is an elephant. One person takes the trunk of the elephant and describes, the elephant is a long, thin, pipe-like being. And someone else stands under the backside of the elephant and says, the elephant is a creature that passes dung on your head. And someone else captures the tusk of the elephant and says, "Ugh!" as the elephant puts the tusk through his chest. And so they all have different perceptions. You could say they're in a better position than people who don't even know there is such an entity as an elephant. They're blind and they're far away also. They have no information. But they have some knowledge, but their knowledge is incomplete. And due to it being incomplete, what they perceive to be true is, in one sense true, but it's only partially true, but because they don't have a full perspective, then it's absurd. If we only understand some factors of reality without understanding the whole picture, then we get the whole thing wrong. Just like if you say the elephant is like a pipe, or you catch the ear and you say it's like some rug or carpet or something like this, then you get it all wrong. In mathematics, you can make complex equations, but if you make some fault, some basic arithmetical mistake, you may have a you may be expert in algebra, but if you make an arithmetical mistake, and of course arithmetic is at a much more basic level than is algebra, but if you make a basic arithmetical mistake, then for all your skill in algebra, you come up with the wrong answer. I think in the schools nowadays, they can't perform even simple arithmetic because they're just used to doing things with computers. And if we ask someone to multiply 27 times 37 in their mind, they'd think that's for a genius. You don't do things like that. You just type 27 times 37 and it comes out. Well, I'm not going to do it right now because it would interrupt the class and I don't multiply that quickly. But the point is that if you make a basic error, you get something wrong at the basic level and everything else you get wrong also. And so, if one doesn't have this basic knowledge of reality, that we are spirit soul, and we are transmigrating from body to body, and how this happens, that's just been described in the last few verses, then whatever else we may do, parabhavastavadabodhajata yavanna jignyasata atmatattvam, without inquiring into the nature of spiritual reality, the nature of spiritual being, then everything else we do simply results in our defeat. By defeat, we can understand that the purpose of life is spoiled, is defeated, because we never even get started on it, because the purpose of life begins with the inquiry into the Absolute. Atato Brahma Jignasa. And even what we, in ignorance, set up to be our goals of life, to be happy in this world, to have lots of money, or whatever our goals may be, we're defeated in that also, because whatever we may aspire for, or even attain, Mrityu Sarvaharaschaham, is all taken away by death. Time takes away everything. So ultimately everyone is defeated. So the beginning of real spiritual life is to distinguish reality from non-reality. Sat anasat. Nasate vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate sataha. What is real is eternal. What is unreal in the full sense, that has no existence ultimately. So this is the beginning of real spiritual life. And without this, then we can't understand anything clearly. We see that Srila Prabhupada insistently, persistently, consistently, again and again and again, repeated, both among his disciples and among members of the public, he repeatedly taught that we are eternal spiritual beings. We are not the body. Because if we don't understand this, then we can't understand anything. Not only that we're not the body, but we are going from body to body. And how does that one verse I didn't read at the beginning of this series, this well-known verse, Mamaivangsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha mana shashtan indriyani prakriti sthani karshati. We are eternal spiritual beings, part and parcel of Krishna, but we are struggling in this world with the mind and the senses because we identify ourselves with that. And this is the basic misunderstanding So, even if we take up the process of Krishna consciousness, without understanding these basic points, we can chant day and night, life after life, and we won't make proper progress due to misconceptions. If we think that chanting Hare Krishna is something to help protect us from impending financial disaster or health, uphold our bodily health or such things, then we can chant, we may even chant with faith, but chanting Hare Krishna might help us in these things. Rather, Krishna may be pleased to help us. But that, if we don't understand the real purpose, then our chanting won't bring us to love of Krishna. Approximately, it was probably 1976. Yeah, it must have been 1976. Devotees in America, with their own idea of how to popularize the chanting of Hare Krishna among ordinary people, we could say, they in Back to Godhead magazine, they featured photographs of what we might call ordinary people, who are actually devotees in disguise, with recommendations for chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. For instance, they had Robert Grant, printing executive. That meant Rameshwar, who was head of the BBT. And something like this, that I'm always under a lot of pressure at work, but when I chant Hare Krishna, it helps me get through the day. And all things like that. And then you had so-and-so, Judy, whatever her name was, Jadurani, artist. When I chant Hare Krishna, my creative abilities expand, like this. And so some devotees were disturbed by this. They thought this was unusual preaching. I brought this to Srila Prabhupada, who changed the whole editorial staff of Back to Godhead. He didn't approve of this. And he instructed that we should teach people to chant Hare Krishna for the sake of developing love of God, not for any material motive. So, Bahujanma Kare, Jadi Shravan Kirtan Tabuta Napai Krishna Pade Prema Dhan. If we make offenses, then we can go on hearing and chanting for many lives, but we won't achieve the result of doing so, which is love of Krishna, Krishna Prema. 10 offenses against the holy name, if we examine, they mostly they're based on improper attitude or improper understanding. So, abhideya, chanting Hare Krishna for the sadhakas, is a matter of abhideya. It's prayojan, pure devotees, they chant Hare Krishna out of pure love. And sadhakas, they chant Hare Krishna as the process of devotional service by which they call out to Krishna to please engage me in your service. But before that comes, of course, when we say before, it's not that one takes a course in the theoretical aspects of Krishna consciousness and then takes it up practically. But sequentially, before one can properly take up abhidheya, or the activities of devotional service, one should understand the sambandhagya. Who are we? Who is God? What is our relationship? Otherwise, chanting may go on, but there won't be proper progress. So we often ask people to come and join us in chanting Hare Krishna, take prasad, all these things. But serious spiritual life begins with inquiring, what is the difference between sat and asat? What is real? Kayame, kame, kenayame, jare tapatray. Sanatana Goswami asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who am I and why am I suffering the threefold miseries in this world? Why don't we see? Why don't we understand? Why do we require this knowledge? Because we are as if blind. Nanu paschantya chita saha. We do not see because our something wrong in our head. Mata karap, they say in Bengali. It's got something wrong in the head. In every language, there must be something. Got a loose screw, they say in English. So the idea, Frankenstein idea, that everything's held together with screws. One of the screws in your head is loose. So that, at least in English, I know from my irreverent childhood and youth that there are many sayings to describe someone who's off. Their intelligence is off, they're stupid, loony. You call someone a loony, means a lunatic, and so many different words. The Krishna also says, he uses sophisticated pejorative terms. Murha, vimurha, achetasaha. Krishna also condemns people who are stupid. But he qualifies how they are stupid. Krishna's scolding others or bad-mouthing others is also philosophical. He doesn't just do it out of some false feeling of superiority. He does it out of an actual feeling of superiority. Why don't we say nanu paschanta chetasa? Nainang, nanu paschanta. Na anupaschanta, that also comes up. Seeing means anupaschanta. Well, one should see by hearing. Shutekshitapata. Seeing by hearing, by understanding. Otherwise, we see but we don't see. We hear, but we don't hear. Now, how is that? We see the world. We see trees, houses, cars. We hear. All the senses are there. Shrotam chakshu sparshanam cha rasanam ghranam eva ta adhishtayam manaschayava. What is the last line? Vishayanupaseva, that's the point. We have all our senses, we see, we touch, we taste, we smell, we feel, we hear, but our idea is sense gratification. Therefore, we don't properly see, touch, smell, taste, feel, or hear, because we take everything to be an object of our sense enjoyment. So practically, we're living in darkness. We see, but we don't see. Pashanapi na pashati. How can we see clearly? Then we have to see in the disciplic succession, anupashyanta. That means hearing from Krishna. Then we can see clearly, seeing from Krishna through disciplic succession. Krishna is like the sun. Krishna surya shama maya hoy andhakar jahan Krishna taha nahi maya radhika. Where there's this sunlight, we can see everything clearly. Krishna is that sun. And maya or ignorance is absence of the sun. What is that? Adidya, what is that? Jnanam tu yad agyanam. What is that verse I know about? Yesham nashitam atmanaha. Tesham adidya vajjnanam prakashayati yatparam. When the sun rises, we can see everything clearly. So when self-knowledge of self-realization arises in the heart, then we can see everything. Krishna, he is just like the sun. Lack of knowledge of Krishna means we are in the darkness. That famous example is given in Shastra, in many places. In the Bhagavatam, it comes up several times. And elsewhere also. The rope and the snake argument. In the twilight, we see a rope and we think it's a snake. Probably you've had this experience right here in this compound. Because there's always fear of snakes. There are many snakes all around here. And there's no electricity in this compound, or very limited. So, just at the twilight, you can see. So you see something, but you misunderstand it. The rope and the snake. Sarpa Raju Nyaya. And we see, but we misunderstand. Srila Prabhupada often used the phrase, proper perspective. When we see things in proper perspective, it means we're seeing, but we misinterpret. We misunderstand. And therefore, our seeing, on the basis of that misunderstanding, we take some action. Just like we see a big snake on the path and we run away. And we come back and we don't go. But there's nothing to fear. Or we come back and we say, no, that's a rope. Don't worry about it. And then we go on the path and we see the rope and we kick it. Ah, it's just a rope. And then it bites us. It wasn't a rope. It was a snake. So, it's important to understand what is what, clearly. In material life, we see but we don't see, means we see but we misunderstand. We ascribe a certain role to something which is not its actual role. And in this way, it's a distorted vision. Maybe you've seen through some lens which distorts the vision. It's some funny thing. If you look at someone's face through a certain lens, they appear to be very fat, and it looks funny. That's what it's supposed to be. Someone went to all the trouble of making such a lens just so someone could look through it and, ha ha ha, that's funny. Well, I guess there's another reason they want to make some money. When people don't understand that the goal of life is self-realization and they have sufficient arrangement for ahara, nidra, bhayan, maitun, then they do things like making plastic ducks to put in your bath and fisheye lens that you can look through, so, and all kinds of useless diversions because they have no higher goal of life. So we see everything in wrong perspective, and this way we both overestimate and underestimate. We give importance to that which is not important, and that which is important we don't give importance. Rope and snake. Rope is not to be feared, but we think it's a snake. We become fearful. A snake is to be feared, but we take it for a rope. So we have here overestimation, underestimation. So a few examples of this. Just like in the modern world, America is highly overrated. I'm not saying that I don't have any campaign against America. But people tend to think that, well, America's very, very important. One example of this occurred a few years ago when one journalist, American journalist called Donald Pearl, was in Pakistan, and some people who didn't like Americans absconded him, and they made a video of severing his head from the rest of his body with an axe, chanting Allahu Akbar at the same time. And this became a very big issue all over the world. how Donald Pearl was beheaded by Muslim extremists in Pakistan, not considering that practically daily Pakistan forces are infiltrating in India and killing Indians, which doesn't make the news in America hardly at all, but one American gets killed and such a big thing. Now the latest major war going on in the world is in the Central African Republic. And if you look at the news, if you scroll down a bit in the headlines, you'll find today 36 people killed in Central African Republic. And if you look a little further down, you'll find another 30 or so killed in Nigeria. If there's one person killed in such a way in America, that would be at the top of the news. So one American, the life of one, we can see just from the news how it's considered that one American is worth, well, approximately how many? 200 Africans or whatever. So it's an overestimate. What happens in America? If there's a storm in America, which it'll be at the top of the news. If there's a storm in India, who cares? It might come in the American news somewhere. So this is an overestimation, because America is powerful at the present time. It goes through phase. There have been so many powerful empires in the world. There was a time when to be a Roman citizen was considered, I am a Roman citizen. That was considered something tremendous, powerful Rome. Now if you're an Italian, well, it's a fairly good passport, but no one takes Italy that seriously, except in football. I think that's about the only way, isn't it? They're taken seriously. In America, they're just like in America, they have the World Series of baseball, but they only play it in America. So why do they call it the World Series? It's this America. God bless America. And may he damn everyone else. So America is an example of overestimation. It's just too much importance is given to America. Everyone in the material world, down to the little bugs, every living being overestimates sense gratification. Everyone thinks sense gratification is so wonderful. I'll be so happy. Shruti Sukh, this is described as. We hear about it. We imagine it. We think it will be something wonderful. But it's not. Kamat krodho bijayate. From lust comes anger. Because either our desire is not fulfilled and we become angry, or it is fulfilled and we're still not happy and we become frustrated. So sense gratification, this is the may in the material world, everyone overestimates. I will be happy by sense gratification, but no one is happy. So sense gratification is overrated, and especially sexual attraction is overrated. I remember at school once, one of my teachers, he said to me, he's the one teacher I can remember who actually said some sensible things sometimes. I can remember three sensible things he said. I hardly remember anything any of them said. But he said to me once, he said, you know, all this talk about sex, it's not such a great thing. He said, once you get married, in those days, some people used to get married before they had sex. And once you get married, and then it's not such a big thing. I didn't believe him. What's he talking about? It must be something great. Overrated. And there's everything is sold. There's some washing machine is sold with a picture of a beautiful young housewife, not a 60-year-old overweight housewife. Beautiful housewife. The washing machine is the car tires in the Western world. Car tires especially are sold with beautiful women and everything. What has a car tire got to do with a beautiful woman? It's the most unsexually stimulating thing you could probably think of. It'd be very difficult to get sexually stimulated by gazing at a car tire. Unless you're really perverse. But somehow or other, it's sold with sexual connotations. They build it into a car tire. So this is ridiculous. Grossly overrated. Sense gratification is grossly overrated. And the whole consumer society runs on stimulating people's desire for sense gratification, because they have to, for the consumer economy to work, they have to manufacture things and then sell them. And if people are just content with whatever they have, then the consumer economy doesn't work. So you have the advertisement industry, as it's called. Industry used to refer to manufacture, but now they call it the advertising industry, where they just manufacture illusions in people's minds to make them buy things. And as I've often given the example of Coca-Cola, or if you want to change, I could say Pepsi-Cola today, that no one would ever buy it unless it was advertised, because it has no value or particular attraction to anyone. But because it's Coca-Cola, it's so wonderful, joy. And then people say, oh, Coca-Cola, it's so wonderful, okay, I'll buy one. People are stupid, because they think they'll get some sense gratification out of it. There is no sense gratification. I mean, even from the standards of sense gratification, Coca-Cola is not really high. There must be better things. I would think a good lassie is a lot better than Coca-Cola, even in terms of sense gratification. But Coca-Cola has to make a business, so they have to put you in Maya and make you think that it's a lot more important than it is. So similarly, we see sports stars. What is this sports star? What is the quality of someone who hits a ball with a piece of wood or kicks another kind of ball with his foot? What has that person got in common with a star? But the term has come sports star, cricket star, film star, music star, fashion star. What else? Politicians. Now, there's, what's it called? Modi mania or something. What's it called? Modi fever or something. There's this absurd idea that if Narendra Modi is elected and as the Prime Minister of India, all of a sudden everything's going to become wonderful. Nonsense. They'll be fed up with him within a few months, no doubt, if he gets in at all. But there's just this idea that, oh, something is so wonderful, and just someone puts their whole consciousness and their hopes and the sports or film star or something, just nonsense, overestimation. The ability of someone to hit a ball with a piece of wood, it's a gross overestimation of their value to human society to give them so much adulation. In fact, what are they doing that for at all anyway? I mean, what is the benefit at all? This should be asked, what to speak of giving them so much adulation? It just shows that the whole society, they're seeing but out of perspective. They're giving importance to that which is important. Why? Because it's all part of the plan or the scheme to neglect that which is actually important. So they overestimate that which is not important, and they underestimate that which is important. Even among devotees, we can overestimate. For instance, we can overestimate or not see in the proper perspective the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas. Now, the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas is unlimited. So how can you overestimate it? Well, we can see it in not correct perspective by thinking that, well, it's all Krishna's mercy, and not make any endeavor ourselves, or not accept that Krishna's mercy also comes in the form of his instructions, which we're supposed to follow, and think that we'll just get Krishna's mercy in the form of the honorary degree, that I'll just be a devotee as I like, and Krishna will give me his mercy. So we may overestimate in the sense of not putting it in the right perspective. Krishna's mercy is there, but Krishna's not obliged to give it to us because we think he is, or because we imagine that he is. We may also overestimate our own spiritual advancement. That's very common. That's Maya. That's not seeing things in the proper perspective. When we read statements in Srila Prabhupada's books, a devotee is very intelligent. We think, oh yeah, that's right, that's me. When we read the neophyte devotees, they cannot understand. Yeah, yeah, those neophyte devotees, that's them. We presume that the statements pertaining to advanced devotees, that's all about me. And about the neophyte devotees, well, that's someone else. So we tend to overestimate our own spiritual advancement. That's Maya. It's not that just by putting on some tilak that we get out of Maya, in case anyone didn't notice. So we may also overestimate, just like Coca-Cola. If you promote it enough, people believe it's something great. So we may overestimate persons who are said to be spiritually great, but we just take it because everyone else says they're great. Just like we have for instance, there's the Pope. He's considered to be a very great spiritual leader, but he's a meat eater and doesn't think there's anything wrong. It never occurred to him that there might be anything wrong with that. So the same thing goes for Dalai Lama. He's, oh, what a great spiritual person. But see, what is his character actually? So even among the society of devotees, we see sometimes like, well, this one, you know, he's so great, very dear to Prabhupada and all this kind of thing. But there is an objective standard of spiritual advancement. It's not necessarily that because someone's a GBC or they've been a devotee for 50 years. It's not necessarily that they are very highly advanced. There is an objective standard, and that's given in Shastra. Rupa Goswami gives the qualities of someone in Bhava Bhakti. These are visible qualities. That is, kshantihi, he tolerates material disturbances, and that also means that is dukeshvanud vignamana sukeshu vigata sprihaha. Both ways. He's not disturbed by material disturbances, and he doesn't get excited if he has some opportunity to enjoy sense gratification. Avyartha kalatvam, he doesn't waste time. He's always engaged in Krishna's service, doesn't like to divert, doesn't take holidays. Virakti, he's detached from this material world. Mana shunyata, he doesn't desire to be praised. He's not proud, thinking I'm very great. Virakti man asha bandha samutkanta. He's confident of Krishna's protection and very strongly desiring to get that. Namagane sadaruchihi. He always has a taste for chanting the names of Krishna, Priti Sadvasati Sthale. He loves Krishna's pastime places. So these, and there are others also. These are nine qualities that he likes to associate with devotees. Anukulyena Krishna, Anukulyasya Sankalpa, Pratikulyasya Varjanam. He performs activities that are favorable for cultivating Krishna consciousness and rejects those that are not. These are objectively quantifiable. Of course, you can't know what's in someone's mind, but it's the point is that it's not just by getting some advertising agency that one becomes a great devotee. So we may tend to overestimate, because that's the nature of a lazy intelligence. In the material world, we have lazy intelligence in material consciousness. Nainang pashantya cheta saha. We don't try to understand. Parabhavastavada bodha jata yavanna jignyasata atma tattvam. Inquiring into the nature of spiritual reality, it requires commitment. It's much easier just to float along in the waves of material delusion. But the thing is, the current takes us down to hell. So, we shouldn't be lazy. We should apply our intelligence to understand all this under the guidance of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. So underestimating, I wasn't. Just as I was saying America, this might sound like some kind of partisan or political statement, but I see it as through the eye of Shastra. Because it's not that we have anything against America, it just happens to be the symbol of gross materialism in the modern age. Maybe at one time Rome was the symbol of gross materialism. Maybe at one time what's now Iraq, it was this symbol. These were all great civilizations at one point in time. There are many others also. So in the same way, India is very much underestimated, including by India's people. Now, we're not talking about some sense of nationalism here, but actually, according to Shastra, India is that land within the whole universe which is meant for spiritual cultivation. And to think that India is backward or stupid because it does have the culture of spiritual realization is actually some propaganda by persons who are against spiritual cultivation. So India is, according to Shastra, the most important place in the universe, because it, the culture here affords an easy entrance or facilitates entrance into spiritual life. And of course, Krishna himself appears here, Ramachandra Bhagavan appears here, and all the holy rivers are here, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared here. So India is underestimated. Its importance is not understood. This is an unfortunate symptom of the modern age, that people think America is very great and India is underestimated. Just as people give so much importance to sense gratification, actually there should be no importance given, or some, considering our position in the material world, some nominal importance can be given to that. But the real aim of life is Krishna consciousness, and people, they don't give any importance to that. They underestimate that. If we understood what Krishna consciousness is, then we would have to take to it. But we don't want to understand, because we want to be vimurha. And therefore people, they underestimate. If at all people think of the Krishna consciousness movement, they think as it's some quaint organization. Quaint, do you know that word? It means unusual, a little weird, but quite nice also. Nothing harmful. But actually, Krishna consciousness is the only necessity of human life. But people underestimate, they don't take it seriously. Wrong perspective, improper perspective. What else? Just as some people may be advertised as great devotees even though they don't have the symptoms, someone may have the symptoms but we don't recognize because they may actually be a great devotee but they're not recognized as such. So there may be so many great devotees among us who we don't recognize. That doesn't mean that we sentimentally think that everyone's a great devotee. Again, we have to give the shastric analysis. What other points? Yeah, the non-devotees, they underestimate Krishna consciousness and they underestimate the Vaishnavas. How glorious are the Vaishnavas? Both the non-devotees and devotees also underestimate the power of Maya. Non-devotees don't even know about it, or only in a very theoretical way. Devotees, we know about it, but we underestimate. We have the kavach. Sometimes we see devotees are very eager to get some kavach and put it around their neck or whatever. But we have the kavach of the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, rise early, chant Hare Krishna, put on Gopi Chandan Tilak. This is our kavach against Maya. But we think we'll get something else, something special, something different. And this way we'll be free from Maya. Well, that's another kind of Maya, to think that, to underestimate the process that's been given to us by Srila Prabhupada in disciplic succession. To underestimate this process, and then we're always thinking of something else. Let me find something else, something special, something different. But we have such a powerful and process, but we underestimate that, and we underestimate the power of Maya. We think that, well, somehow I don't really have to rise early or chant properly or any of these things, and anyway, I'm a devotee. So that's a very grave danger, to underestimate the power of Maya. It's better to overestimate. There's no overestimating. But we should be afraid of Maya. Devotee is not afraid, but he should be afraid of Maya. He's confident of the protection of Krishna, but he should be afraid. Maya can gobble us up at any time. We may also underestimate the mercy of Krishna and devotee. I just said we could overestimate it. We can underestimate it also and become despondent and say, oh, I can't make any advancement. I am hopeless. But if we think like that, that's... If we become depressed and hopeless, then that's indirectly an insult to Krishna and his devotees, saying that I'm so hopeless that Krishna can't help me. It's actually an excuse by people who want to be in Maya, and they blame it on Krishna. Krishna can't help me. So we should be regretful of our position in Maya, but we shouldn't become despondent. We should be hopeful also that Krishna will help us, that even though I'm so fallen, that Krishna will help me. So this proper perspective begins with understanding who we are, how we're stuck in this material world, what is our relationship with Krishna. This is proper perspective, comes from sambandhagya, hearing this, and that becomes solidified, that's called realization, by acting in Krishna consciousness. And Krishna reciprocates to help us to understand all these things. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? No. All right. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Sri Gauranitai ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is ki jai.